Vectis Radio. Vectis Radio. FM 104.6. Bringing the island's community together.
Oh, hello. The Mid-Morning Show is sponsored by E.ON and the Footprint Trust, warming up homes across the island with boilers for only £240. See if you're eligible by calling 0333 202 4533.
Okay, welcome. It's the lunchtime social discussion. We used to call it a debate, but we just thought that was a bit of an argument. But we've stopped doing that. We have discussions now. And we've got two people that I've been wanting to get in for the last couple of months. And I'm glad you've been able to get in today and give us some of your time, a whole hour, in fact. So we welcome Title. I'm pretty sure I got this right. You're the CEO of the Isle of Wight Council.
Just Chief Executive, yeah. John Metcalf.
Chief Exec.
Yeah.
So, Chief Exec, Lord Metcalf.
Not quite, no.
thanks for coming in. We're going to come back and ask you in a minute what you do. What does a Chief Exec do? And we've also got the leader of the council, Dave Stewart.
Yeah, hi. I'm pleased to be here.
Are you really?
I am, because as an islander, forgetting all the other political stuff that goes on, I care passionately about this place. And I think part of my role, since you were talking about roles, is to do what I think is right for the island. Some of that's not always popular, but at the end of the day, you know, we're lucky to live here, we're lucky to experience it. So if coming along and talking to your listeners is going to help that cause, I'm happy to do so.
Excellent. Good stuff. Good to hear it. And are you the two most powerful people at the council, or is there someone else tucked away?
There is, actually. I've got a business assistant, and I think she's the most powerful person in the council because she runs my diary.
Right, okay.
But I think in real terms, Dave is the leader of the political leadership, so he looks after the political leadership, the policy strategy that the politicians want to do. And as a chief executive, I look after and manage all of the officers, the employed staff, if you like, and we try and take all of the policy and strategy wishes of the members and try and convert them into actions on the ground.
Okay, so how much stuff do you actually do on a day-to-day basis now? Much stuff do you actually sort of say, right, okay, we can't do anything without Dave and 40 councillors rubber stamping things?
I think it's one of the things that makes the organisation work is there are lots of decisions that are delegated to officers. I think if we had to push everything back up to the members, then the place just wouldn't work. So what we look for from the councillors is a really clear steer about the policy and the strategy, what they want to do, how they want to achieve it. Then we'll agree how we're going to do it. And then as officers, we have to go away and try and make those decisions and make things work. So it is important that when we go out to consult on strategies and various bits of things, that we get people's feedback, because we use that as our guide, as our template, if you like, for how we do things and how we take decisions as officers.
How much of a stressful job is it?
I never think of it as stressful. I really don't. I've done the job 3 years on Friday. I'll have been in the job, and I still absolutely love it. I think, as Dave said, I moved to the island in 1997, so I've been here a long time. I actually came for 3 years. I thought, I'll stay for 3 years. The council was the right time in my career, and then I'll move on. But the island just got its hooks into me. I really enjoyed living here, and it's a real pleasure and privilege to work for the council and to serve the island.
Good. And obviously, you only came for 3 years and ended up staying for 21 years. That's quite a thing, isn't it?
Yeah. I actually love the place. I mean, the people are so friendly. The island is such a beautiful place to live. And I think the council, you know, where we're trying to get to now as a place to work is a really special place, because we're trying to do the right things for the island. We're focused on, you know, how we can do the best for the population, improve island lives. And, you know, we've got a really good momentum. And I think over the last period of time as well, we've built up a really strong staff team. So all of the staff are really clear about what we're trying to do and why we're trying to do things. And yes, times are hard and money can be hard, but we've really been very innovative and creative about how we use the money and how we make the best of it for the island's community.
So he's not fully accepted, you know that, don't you, of course? And this is a true story. We had a very nice gentleman come over to the Isle of Wight from Island Roads, and he said, I'm so committed on the commitment of this, you know, 25 years. He just said, I'm committed to the island to do the roads properly. And I said, how long is this contract? And he said, 25 years. And I said, and you're moving over? And he said, yeah. I said, don't know whether you'll be accepting that time or not by the island, because we're a funny people. So I'm only making the point that I'm sure John's doing a fantastic job and he's very committed to the island, but he's not a corkhead, so we have to watch one.
My daughter was born here, though.
Ah, she's okay then. Yeah.
You need to work on the accent. That's what
this is very toned down from my normal accent.
Chuck in a bit of rouar and you'll be all right.
How are you, bunny lad?
So would it be fair to say then you both are at the head of the council when it's probably the most difficult time that we've probably had in our lifetime?
I think it's probably difficult, but it's also an opportunity. And I get asked the same question that you've just asked John, really, by people, you know, why'd you do it? Because obviously I've had a previous career in the police, as people know. And, you know, at some point along the road, I suppose there'll be this thing called retirement to kick into. But actually, it genuinely feels like an opportunity to do a job which is very interesting. At least to look back and think, well, you know, over those whatever the period of time is, you know, I tried to do my bit for the island. So that's quite a driver. In terms of the setup and trying to understand how this council operates, which I've tried to do over the last 18 months or so now, I have a cabinet team, if you like, of 10, including me. So we're the administration, they call it, and we're the kind of political decision makers, and we meet regularly, and we talk about all sorts of things, as you know, from floating bridges through to whatever.
We'll come to that.
We'll come, sure we will. But we make decisions on where, given the limited money that we've got, what is the best thing to do. And I said to you, I think, you know, there's an opportunity as well, is because we have had to make some difficult decisions since we came in terms of the budget, because, you know, the impression we were given was that, you know, 6 months to save the white and all this stuff. Actually, you know, I was expecting to see a book that was going to tell me the council was about to collapse, and with it would have gone everything in the island. But actually, we've worked really hard with the officers, and I have to say, I think I see my work with John more as a team than just two kind of areas.
He's nodding, that's good.
I don't know. Which way did
doesn't
he nod?
Doesn't work on radio, does it?
And I think our job is, one, to stabilise the finances of the council, which I think we've done that, albeit things are tough. We are in a more positive place. And then to try and work on all the key things the Isle of Wight Council's got to do for the community and get ourselves to a good place with those. And we have a work in progress on that at the moment.
Okay. Loads of questions. My first one was, it's the cutbacks. We got more cutbacks, and you've already working on next year's, because you've got to make more savings and so on and so forth. How long will they go on for? Do we know?
Well, I suppose looking at it, if we look in two stages, if you like, what we're doing now, the budget plan that we've approached this time, and then how we see that in the future. So what we decided this year was that we would get out as early as we could with the options that we have to find the magic figure of £5.5 million, which is what we need, if you like, to balance the books. Now, there are many options in there. That doesn't mean they're the final thing, and never did, but it means that in the absence of any better suggestions, this is how we're going to balance the books, because I think people need to know that we are going to balance the books. Having put that out, of course, lots of people have come back, and if I just use parking as an example, and say, well, you can't put charging charges at Ryde, you can't do this in Newport. Well, we could, but we may not want to. But if there's a better alternative, we may not need to. And what it's done, it's allowed us to have a conversation. And I think that's the way forward. We should be communicating with our community, because not just doing it too. I've met with the business association now from Newport and Ryde, and the town council from Newport and Ryde, and already that's generating some ideas of different things we could do. Because one thing we don't have in the council, and there's nobody does, is the monopoly on ideas. And so if people out there think, actually, there's something you could be doing that you hadn't thought of, that's great, because that's what we want.
Obviously, you're aware that they are concerned. Shopkeepers in Newport are concerned. We had one in last week who's been, you know, in the town for 30 odd years, and you know, they're kind of struggling with things. Other people are as well. So you're aware of that. So what's the consensus of the feeling of what you're actually going to do and what you think you're going to do? Because there are some people, and we had ideas, and I'm pretty sure you've heard this already, let people park for, you know, the first half an hour for free so they can nip in and get whatever they've got to do. And if they're long-term parkers, that you just got to, if you've got to put the prices up, put the prices up. That, to me, is probably what most people are thinking. That element of, you go up Node Hill when you've got, we counted them the other day, there's about 12 places where you can get food. So it might be a case if you just want to stop off, get your food, and that's going to put people off if they've got to add a pound to park in. So, but if they can park there for free for half an hour, and, you know, if you are a long-term parker, then you've just got to pay a little bit extra to make up for it. Yeah, that makes sense.
And people will know, those that go off island and visit other places with their cars, you can pay an awful lot more than we pay on the island. And I'm sure there are places you can pay less as well. But I'll give you some practical things that we've talked about. So let's go to Ryde for a second, where at the moment Union Street has four zones. And what some people have been doing is staying as long as they can in one zone and then nip across to the next zone and then nip across to the next zone, to avoid breaking the zone time.
Just have one zone then.
Yeah, but actually, exactly. But actually what they're doing is stopping other people coming in and parking and doing what you've just said. So that, I think, is one of those areas. And we had a conversation with Ride Business Association about that, because it's important to understand that. So the zones, which is in the budget as an option to change to one zone, is certainly something we think is, at the moment, a right thing to do, to be fair. The other one, you mentioned Newport, and you talked about the 30 minutes, and it would be nice to have 30 minutes, which you do in Upper St James Street and other places. But I'll just point out as a matter of fact that the income generated by street parking is highest in the first 2 hours, which it would be, wouldn't it? Because that's when people park. So we have to take that into account. If we said, actually, well, no, do you know what, we're going to give an hour's free everywhere, that's great. But that probably would have quite a significant impact on that money. And don't forget that 5.5 million we've got to hit one way or another.
Yeah, I think one of the other challenges as well, Ian, is that it's very hard to enforce that half hour. So we don't know whether people are parking there for three quarters of an hour or an hour. So you're not actually getting the churn that you would expect. Because to be able to look at St James's Street, we'd almost have to have a civil enforcement officer there all day, every day. And clearly we can't do that, because their role is about making sure the highways are kept clear, making sure that people are paying in car parks. So if there was some form of charging mechanism or some form of ticketing mechanism, at least we'd have a way of keeping better control and actually seeing whether we were getting that half hour churn or whether it was a little bit longer than that.
Maybe they go to the machine, get a free ticket for half an hour.
Yeah,
like they do that in Marks and Spencer, the places like that, where you actually turn up, you have to get your ticket stamped. This is the time that I arrived.
Yeah. And there are all the sort of possibilities that we can look at. I think, as Dave was alluding to, this is the first time in my recollection that the council has published its budget proposal so early, which gives everybody a really good opportunity to have a look at them and really think about, well, how does this impact and what alternative could I offer to what the council's got to do? You know, you asked the question earlier about, is this the end of the cuts? I was just reflecting. So I've worked in local government for 32 years, and I can remember 1 year out of those 32 years where my budget actually went up. So in a way, it's been a constant call for local government to try and, you know, make the most use of its money to be as efficient as it possibly can. So we're used to dealing with it. It gets harder and harder every year because you're taking more and more money out. But at least if you go out very early with ideas, then you can get other people coming back with the alternatives and other suggestions that they come forward with.
Just out of interest, what was the year that it went up?
It was around about 1995, and it was in connection with a big project I was involved with in the northeast.
Right, okay.
Hope it wasn't that football ground up there, because as a Spurs supporter, I get worried.
Actually,
about
it was a cricket ground, actually.
Oh, okay. See, there was nothing wrong with Roker Park. They wanted to have a new ground.
Oh, Roker Park was amazing.
It was.
Yeah. I was brought up there.
Just coming back to that point you made, there's two things there. One is the other people we are engaging with actively are the town and parish councils. They appreciate that enforcement, if we could be more robust with our enforcement, obviously that would increase the income purely by people doing what they should be doing. That's one point that's come out of that. They've also come up with a few other ideas, and I think that was, for me, was why going out early with options is a good way to do it, albeit we've got a lot of noise now. But as I pointed out, even to the people that recently produced a petition at the full council chamber, they were only able to do that and nobody able to air their views before the budget, because we are so far out. We've created that opportunity for the public to speak, and that's one of my values, really.
Sure. Sometimes we lose sight of those things. We just get angry, and we let off a lot of steam, and we get angry with people, and you just think, well, hang on a minute, look at it logically. You're just doing your job, and you've got to find the cutbacks from somewhere. I wouldn't want either of your jobs.
Yeah, well, but there's some positive things going on. I mean, I was listening to John saying about every year they've had to do that. Do you know what? We've this year, and in the last kind of period that we've been in, managed to borrow some money from the government pot, invest it off island in some safe but growing investments, and that's bringing in, my last recollection of speaking to Stuart Hutchins and my colleague who's focused on that, is bringing into the island net for us over £1 million. That's £1 million we haven't had to fine out of the council's budget here on the island, because we've, and that's paying our debt, that's paying back the government interest, that's doing that bit. I think that's been good. As long as the investment's safe, that's another way of getting income. So we're into that.
I'm glad you're shouting about it now, because I've not heard of that.
Oh, right. Well, it's and a lot of people haven't, probably, and that's the other big thing, is communicating. But that's working well for us.
People need to know. That's the one thing. I wouldn't want to criticise anything else, because I wouldn't want your jobs, but I think it's the one thing that, because people are angry, because people get upset, and a lot of the time it's because they don't know. And if they were armed with the facts, it's like you're coming out now and you're talking about something that, and most people would be thinking, oh, that's what they're going to do and it's going to happen and it's going to, no, hang on a minute. Now you've actually said, we're not doing this until, or we're not going to make a decision on it until March.
It's February, but we're going to, we'll make our kind of, have our, what I call our formal cabinet type meeting. We'll be doing that in January. So we've given everybody who wants to chip in positive ideas, and you know, a lot of people are very good at criticising, but I like constructive, i.e. okay, what's your choice then? And actually we've had a number of really good ideas, but they've got 2 or 3 months now to throw in some ideas, and I have to tell you, we've had some good ideas come in.
Excellent.
So I would thank the people that have done that. But the investment thing has worked well for us. And there's other things we're doing to raise money. Our regen stuff is starting to come to fruition now.
Now, you brought the regen up.
Yeah.
You know what I'm going to ask you, don't you? All right, because I asked you in the street about 2 months ago. All right, the regen thing that a lot of people are talking about at the moment. There's a few people that are concerned within the Riverside Centre because they've seen pictures and designs and so on and so forth, and we ain't in it. The Riverside Centre is completely obliterated and not part of it. And there was a lady that came in yesterday and she said she was really concerned because she had a chat with the lady that's heading up the regeneration thing, and they said something about the remit doesn't fit what we do here, the Riverside Centre doesn't fit with what they're trying to do with the regeneration. So we're all a little bit concerned, and I asked you about 2 months ago, where does that leave us then? As a station, we're right smack bang in the middle of it. So
certainly don't want to see Vectis Radio disappear, because I actually quite like Vectis Radio. If for nothing else, and I'll say this, you seem to have some kind of ethical values about the place. You're certainly not our friends all the time, and there's nobody wants you to be, but you're fair. And sometimes, and in fairness to Wild White Radio, when I deal with them, most of the time, they can be fair. I don't want anybody to do me any favours, but I'd just like people to be fair. But on your particular question, we have obviously a big regen plan for Newport Harbour and Newport Quay, and we hope that's going to help Newport shape itself as an absolute destination. That's one of our aims. Because if Newport Harbour and all of this is successful, then clearly that's going to bring money in for the council through business rates, etc. So there's a win-win. But the thing about it is, and I always talk to my colleagues about, let's get some pace into this, get something done, you know. But I have had to accept that regenerating an area as large as this needs a lot of steps to go through. The one we're at the moment is what they call the master plan. So we've now contracted a group of people to do the detail that will say, is the Riverside in it? Is it going to need to go out? What's the detail? So that, I think, John will know this, April is a...
We expect to get the first master plan back in April, yes. Yeah. But what we have done, I think, is we've made a commitment to everyone at the Riverside that when we do that master planning, whatever it looks like, we'll take into account their needs. And if the Riverside isn't the right building, doesn't fit with that particular proposal, we'll still make sure that we look after everyone here and protect the services that are provided by not only yourself, Ian, but you know, all of the brilliant community sector and voluntary sector that we've got here. That's an absolute key criteria in terms of how we put the plans together.
So we don't have to worry about it. And with this, you can say that now, John.
Yeah.
But then, you know, in X amount of months time, you might forget about it. So is it written down somewhere?
I've actually got that confirmed back to me today, because I made sure I went and checked before I came down here, because that was absolutely what we wanted to achieve.
I refused to give you my office, though. I did say to him, that's not going to happen.
But I also think as well that, and we've got to be honest, that trying to do schemes like this on the island is difficult. You know, the land values are not great. Trying to secure people to invest in schemes like this is really difficult. They want returns much more quickly than the island can provide. So we have to try and put some attractive schemes together that will interest an investor, so it's not always the council that's putting its money in. But when we do that, we might have to move a few things around, but we absolutely have to protect the likes of yourself and the voluntary sector who are down here, because...
And you will, yeah?
And we will. And one of the things is that, you know, for me, the voluntary sector on the island is probably the strongest I've ever come across, and the one thing that we do want to do is make sure that we're supporting the voluntary sector in every way that we can.
Excellent. Because, I mean, you probably know this, though, there's 40-odd different charities... 40-plus different charities that work from here. I mean, there's two CICs just in this little part of the building with R4Ps, which is a totally separate company. But
so what I will give an undertaking is when that comes back in April and we get the picture, we will come and have a discussion down here with you and these other people who are out of here, because I think people on the island do value what is here. And what they need to know is the service, if you like, is preserved. What we're saying is, whether it'll be here, if physically in this building or somewhere else, we need to preserve the service. Best example of that is we've just opened up yesterday, formally, our one public service hub up at County Hall. You walk into reception now, you've got a brand new kind of layout, which captures the citizens' advice, Age UK, Isle of Wight Council. It's a one-stop shop. And the feedback, and I've been chatting to the people that come in, not the staff, although I've spoken to them, and they're saying, well, this is good, because actually I can go and sort that problem out over there and that over there, and it's all done. And that's the whole purpose of it.
Is your building fit for purpose?
In my view, no. It's just time for change, in my view. And I think if we're going down this road of what we call the one public service, so on our island, all our services, be they police, fire, ambulance, health, ourselves, work much more together. One of the things we can look at is our estate and be more effective and efficient with that and give ourselves decent estate for the future. Whether you go up to the hospital, which is probably the most recent, if we go over to some of the police stations on the island, you'll see the state of them. County Hall, which looks like a sort of worn-out Premier Inn. It all, for me, signals a need at some point for somebody to be brave enough to say, do you know what, we're going to upgrade and get ourselves working together and be more efficient. I'll just give you one example. We brought Citizens Advice over into this new one-stop shop. We, the council, probably haven't physically gained lots of money out of that, but what we have done is we've got Citizens Advice in, save them a big lease costs, and so actually we've given them a nice working environment, and I think that's worth it. So going back to your question, I'd like to see, and people know this, a much more purpose-built, not just for the Isle of Wight Council, but for all our services, place where we can all work out together.
I agree with Dave's aspiration, absolutely, but I have to be a bit more pragmatic. And at the moment, the building is fit for use, it's fit for purpose, all the staff are in the building, and we're making improvements to the building so it works better for the staff. I don't like the building, I think it's an eyesore in Newport, but we are stuck with it to try and, at these times where we're trying to balance our budget, we've got to make the best use of it at this moment in time. There are other councils that have been fortunate, that I'm aware of, their county halls have stood on land that's been quite valuable. They've been able to sell the site and rebuild another county hall.
But there's a good example there, Ian, of our different roles. So for me, it's about I try and set the vision and direction of what we want to achieve.
Yeah.
John will bring me back to reality and say, yes, but at the moment, you know, we've got a whole load of staff in there working hard, not in the perfect conditions, but at least they're able to do the job. We have to do the minimum to look after them. But we shouldn't lose sight of that opportunity in due course to improve it, because, and I've had noise from people about, oh, spending all this money on County Hall. Actually, if you've got effective staff with decent facilities, they will perform well for the community. So we do recognise that we need to do that.
And I think the other thing is we're also trying to enable our staff so they can work much more in a much more agile way. So we're giving them tech so they can work a bit more from home, or they can work from touchdown bases in Sandown or Ryde. So they don't need to be in County Hall all of the time. What we have to do, going back to being pragmatic, though, we are moving across another 150 staff who are currently Enterprise House in on St Cross. So they're going to come and join us in the new year into County Hall as well. So we have to spend money to move that around. What that does do, though, is it allows us to save almost £200,000 a year in terms of the leasing cost of that building, which means that we've got less to do in terms of meeting that £5.5 million gap. We don't have to affect frontline services because we've saved on the cost of that back office lease, and we've moved people into County Hall to do that.
Okay, so in the future then, there is a plan somewhere that you need to move, because you'll need to move with the times and have a building that is...
So that's built into our one public service strategy, really, and we've got a team working on that as we speak. We're engaged, I can tell you now, we're engaged with the Chief Constable on the issue, because I've spoken to her at some length, Police and Crime Commissioner, the head or lead players in the voluntary service, and John's absolutely right. We have... And I don't say to score points, we have an amazing voluntary sector here on the island, the envy of many places. So we have to include them in our thinking. We've got ourselves, obviously the local authority, you've got health, who are in dilemmas already, as we all know, but they're all signed up to the idea of better working together, better use of our assets and trying to provide a better service. And actually, if we do that, we'll probably find we can do it and save a bit of money in the process.
Ready for a tricky one, Dave?
Yeah, I like trickies.
Floating bridge?
Yeah, what would you like to know?
What's the latest on that, then?
So, floating bridge, I'll start with it's slightly humorous, but it's a fact. There was one day in the recent months where the only ferry working on the Solent was the floating bridge. And people remember all the nightmares we had with Red Funnel and Whiteling's engines and hover travels, whatever. The point about the floating bridge for me is this. I recognise, as do my colleagues, that it is a lifeline between East and West Cowes. And many people, children, employees, even leisure people, use the floating bridge to get from East to West Cowes regularly. And our aim was to get a good and reliable service. And people, I know we'll say it's a political point, but the fact of life is we inherited the floating bridge that is now there. By the time we came in, it had been designed, it had been built, and was literally coming down on the May to be put onto the chains at Cowes. So we had a fait accompli. The LEP, who paid a lot of money, but not all of it, had paid their money, and there was a business case that went in that said, if you buy us this bridge, this is what it will deliver. It didn't do what was supposed to be delivered. People know that. And we've had a lot of challenges with it, some which have been there for a long time. So if you go back in the records, nobody can actually tell you in the last 4 or 5 years prior to the bridge arriving exactly what the chain debts ever were, because those records weren't captured. People will know, because I used to do it before the new bridge arrived. From time to time, their cars would bottom out as you come off the bridge, the old bridge. And it's noisy. When you bang metal on the concrete, it's pretty noisy, and that's when those things come down. So those were inevitable. What surprised me when I did the review, and I was talking to others about recently, what we did as a council was decided to get a like-for-like change. So, you know, whereas people say, well, why don't we put, you know, engines on it to get rid of the chain problem, or why don't we design it differently completely into a different style? Good questions, but we didn't. We inherited what we've got. Now, what we thought we had, a bit like the new Whitelink ferry or the new Red Funnel or the new hovercraft, was what we would describe as teething troubles. Actually, what I think we've got is not so much a problem with the bridge, but the problem with dealing with that Medina estuary. The yachty people will know that when those tides are flying, they are really powerful, and you have to compensate for that, whatever you put there, because it pulls those chains to one side. We've got, and there's lots gone on in the estuary there. You've got a breakwater, you've got ferries who run aground, you've got all sorts of things. So we think there's as much of an issue to look at that environment as there is the bridge itself. But what people want is to be able to get up in the morning, drive their car down to the bridge, know it's going to be when they can get to West or East Cowes, and then come back again. That's what they want. And that's what we're trying to make sure we deliver.
Yeah. And I think what we're trying to find now is, and we find it's working about 95% of its scheduled times. So in that sense, it's even at those times of difficult tides, it's working as regularly as the last floating bridge did. But what is happening, and has happened because such a spotlight focused on it, whenever anything goes wrong, it just becomes a great storm and everybody's interested in and why that's gone wrong again. So
it does seem,
the previous floating bridge used to ground, this floating bridge ran aground, and we suddenly it's a big storm and there's much more of it. I think that spotlight has caused many more people to take interest, and things that used to probably happen on floating bridge 5 that nobody even noticed that just happened, now whenever it goes on floating bridge 6, everyone's having a really good look at it. But you know, we're working very hard to make sure that it stays at those 95% scheduled hours.
It does come across that way, and again, it's shouting about 95%. A lot of people wouldn't be aware of that because they just see it, oh, it's off again, and we go to town on it. I was gonna say I went out for a drive the other day, and I think the mentality of the island, we need to change a little bit. We need to be a bit more positive, because we go out now. When I went for a drive the other day, I thought, well, our roads are better. They are. You know, apart from Note Common, that needs a bit of work, but I'm sure we'll get there. You know, we're going to have teething problems, but the roads are exceptional in most places, the ones that have been done.
I've had people come over to the island, stay with friends, and they say, oh, your roads are good over here, because they don't know what they were like, and a lot of islanders do. You know, you go down the military road now, you still drive as fast as they do, and they probably shouldn't, but it's smoother to do it. Mm. You go down Whitwell High Street, it's, you know, it's a decent high street again. And I'm sure there's examples of that all over the island. That's a good thing. That's the kind of thing that the contract that we have enables us to deliver. In the current financial climate nationally, we as an Isle of Wight Council would never have been able to afford to do that now, as we say. But we secured, and credit to whoever got the original contract in terms of the money, something like £460 million from government in a grant to contribute towards doing our roads up. We then put in, I think it's another, something like eight or nine, maybe 10 million ourselves. But at the end of the day, practical thing is people are getting the roads done up.
The other thing I was going to say is, you travel around and I saw these big buildings going up, these little factories are popping up here, there and everywhere, especially along the river and so on. You've got the Blade Vestas. They've just got a big contract they're going to take on people. And you just look around and you think, hang on a minute, it's not as negative as we all think. And I'm guilty of that. I used to work at Plessy's, and, you know, every time I drove by Plessy's, there was another shop that had gone. You know, the fact that the metalwork shop went, the paint shop went, and then all of a sudden you drive by and you see, okay, there's a supermarket there, and you've got a Sensos, and then you look across the river and you've got all these buildings going up, and you think, and we spoke to somebody else that was doing something for planes, and they came in and they said, we've just employed a load of more people. And you just think, you don't see it because you don't want to see it, because it's easier just to knock something, it's easier just to slaughter something and give somebody a hard time rather than look at the facts. So I'm a little bit more upbeat than I was a couple of weeks ago, and hearing that, you know, the floating bridge is up to 95%, yeah, there will be people that moan and groan, there will be people that will may even criticise your facts and figures there, but if that's correct, you know, 95% is fairly decent, and we should not forget that.
No,
it's decent, but actually we can get better. You know, there's little things we can do, and we are doing. You know, if we can make the chains less noisy, if we can make sure the depths are good for our yachting community, because we're a busy yachting place in the summer, and I do respect that. If we can make sure that you know, the noise is down, which we actually done with a bit of work. But most importantly, people want to be able to go down there and know that they can get on it and get across. It's fantastic in Cows Week. People know that. So we're working at it. I just wanted to give you an interesting bit of information, because I remember reading it yesterday. I thought, it is. So a census, which people, when it first came in, said, oh, yeah, yeah. A census Isle of Wight named Europe's number one contact centre support team.
Yeah, they sent me the story last night. It's in our news later today.
You think, great. That's brilliant. Pretty impressive, isn't it?
And look at all...
People forget, I mean, that was a result of almost 3 years of work with the council, working with the Sensors, trying to show them different sites, trying to persuade them that the island had the right workforce that they could work with. And so we were doing that as a bunch of officers. Dave's administration came in, and I think the first decision we asked them to make was, you know, will we put something in to support Sensos and secure them for the island for the jobs that it would bring? And you know, to be fair, they took that decision, and that's a real positive. And I do think you're right. We tend to always look to the negative. We don't really focus on the good stuff that's happening. And I guess, I don't know, in the modern world of social media, it's easier to get more clicks if you put negative or very interesting headlines out, rather than simply saying, you know, the council's done its job. Yeah, we don't want a pat on the back for doing a good job, because we should be doing a good job, but sometimes that recognition just goes by us, I think.
I think the majority of people do want the truth. I think the majority of people are not negative, because you don't hear from the you hear from the noisy minority most of the time. And unfortunately, people think that is what the opinion is of most, and it's not. It really isn't.
Sometimes it's about how the truth is written, though, isn't it? So, you know, in many stories that we've been looking at over the last 6 months, you know, the council's view comes in the last 50 words of a 300-word column, and you've lost the council's position or the good stuff for the island, not even council business, all the good organisations we get.
Can I just make a couple of plugs here?
I want to take a point on that in a moment, but we've got to take a quick commercial break, though. Okay. We've got to pay the rent, unless you've got a few hundred quid in your pocket that you could lend us. Quick break, then we'll come back.
Vectis Radio, FM 104.6, Isle of Wight Community Station.
Isle of Wight Studio Glass at Arrowton Barnes, Craft Village, is one of the leading British glassmaking studios and has a reputation worldwide. The studio is open 7 days a week, and you can come and watch Master Glassmaker Timothy Harris create his amazing designs. A visit to Isle of Wight Studio Glass also offers an opportunity to purchase a piece of glass that you will treasure for always. You can also buy online at isleofwightstudioglass.co.uk or call us on 522-339.
This is a public warning. The following commercial may contain nuts.
Go nuts for Christmas with Easy Way. With walnuts, pistachios, Brazil nuts, trail, Caribbean and Bombay mix, cashews,
bless you,
pecans, ground flaked and whole almonds, even popcorn.
go really nuts this Christmas with EasyWay. Weigh exactly what you want and save cash too.
Bless you.
EasyWay, the grocery store with so much more. In Pyle Street, Newport. EasyWay, it's the easiest way to shop.
At Scottish and Southern Electricity Networks, we work all year round to prepare for winter and help keep your lights on. But winter can bring all kinds of weather. So we have a free service that might help. Our priority services register is for people who need egg support if there's a power cut. If you or someone you know could benefit, register at ssen.co.uk/priority services. Scottish and Southern Electricity Networks, powering our community.
Are you between 11 and 19 years old? Do you hold a gateway card from the Isle of Wight Council? Would you like to learn about radio in the fun and energetic setting of a live radio station? Then the four-piece short break Saturday morning course is for you. For just £5 per session, you'll learn how to present, promote, produce and podcast radio shows. And you'll even get on air live. To book or for more details, email contact to vectisradio.fm or go to 4ps.org.uk.
The average radio station has 500 tracks on a rolling playlist. We have over 5,000. This is Vectis Radio, FM 104.6.
Oh, hello. The mid-morning show is sponsored by E.ON and the Footprint Trust, warming up homes across the island with boilers for only £240. See if you're eligible by calling 0333 202 4533.
Here we are then. We're back for part two of the Lunchtime Social. We have John Metcalf, and he's not CEO. He's just a chief exec. Because that's a higher level wage, isn't it?
Oh, I don't think so, no. No, it's just too many words in the title.
Certainly higher than the leader of the council.
And we go. Oh, we've touched something. Okay, we'll quickly move on. I cut you off in your prime. Just to remind you, I've got a couple of questions from Oscar from St George's School. He's got a whole host of stinky questions.
Yeah,
we're ready.
We'll go for Oscar shortly. But I just wanted to make one mention, one thing. We were talking about a census and the success that they'd had there. And you were talking about communication. So we are, before Christmas, going to launch our own e-newsletter. And people will be able to sign up, as long as they've got an email address, and they'll get opportunity then to just have that sent to them and tell them what actually is going on in the council. Because I agree with you, I don't think we currently communicate as well as we could, albeit we've got a hard-working team trying to do it. Then we've got some other good things going on which people forget. We had a digital conference a few weeks ago now, and we're very near to signing up an Institute of Coding. So young people, I'd say particularly, although somebody pointed out in an email to me, anybody can, but a training centre for coding on the island. I mean, Rapa Nui, who everybody know about, use coding in a lot of what they do. And to be able to have something on the island like that is really, I think, is out there. And so we're pushing hard. So there is some good news along the channel, as well as the difficult financial budget. Anyway, I'm looking to speak to Oscar. Yeah. I'm quite excited now.
Go on, Oscar, you've got a couple of questions there. Come on up to that microphone. There you go. I'll hold your script. There you go.
When you were young,
He's never been younger. he's always had that grey hair. Go on.
What were your career aspirations when you were growing up? Did you always want to work for the council?
So do you want me to tell that and then John?
Okay,
so when I was young and I grew up, I was born in Brading on the island, and my first career was in the bank. But actually, I didn't like the fact because they were going to send me off the island to work, and I didn't want to move off the island. That sounds awful, doesn't it? So I thought, I'll join the police, and that became my ambition. Now, I'm not the tallest person in the world, so it was all about trying to find a way of growing fast to get in. And then the first thing I did was move me to Portsmouth, so my ambition completely got wiped out. But I have to say, once I got into that particular career, and it was always to be a detective, unfortunately, I bumped a few police cars, and I probably never have had a career in traffic, but... as a detective, I quite enjoyed, because it's probably because I'm a nosy person. My mum was a bit nosy as well, and that's the way it is. So I had that career. So in many ways, I had my ambition. Council was never an ambition at the time I was in the police. And even though people may not believe it, I'm not a highly political person in the sense of I thought, I don't want council. I didn't even want to serve anywhere else from where I live, and I now live in Knighton. But as you get into it, you realise there are opportunities to meet some amazing people. I mean, here we are at Vectis Radio. And so what it does, and I'd say this to anybody really, if you have ambition, You never know what you'll achieve. Just go for it.
Yeah. I suppose when I was young, like most young kids, I just wanted to be a professional footballer. But then it took me a lot.
Sunderland.
For Sunderland. Absolutely for Sunderland.
Yeah, but some people's ambitions are limited.
They've got this going on, I know. But after that, I really wanted to be... I thought I wanted to work in engineering. Spent a couple of weeks at work Caterpillar factory plant in the northeast. So, you know, the big tractors that move all the earth, and realised that wasn't quite for me. So I actually fell into working for the council. So after I'd been to college, I was lucky enough to get a graduate place working for a council in the northeast, and I tried out lots of different council departments, which a council did. And after that, I was just hooked and wanted to stay in there.
Hey, look, before going further, you've heard it here from the horse's mouth that Dave's not that tall. I just want to, you know, that was good of you to say that.
I'm not. I
know some people are touchy about
it. When I went for my interview, the chief constable said, this height limit, he said, you know, you've got to be, I don't know, 5'8", whatever it was then. And I said, yeah, but I'm growing so fast.
Okay, next question then, Oscar. Big voice.
Have you got a very important, stressful job? What do you do in your spare time to relax?
Well, I don't know what you do. I know what I do.
Well, do you want to go first?
I'll go first on that one. So, as I said earlier, some days it can be really stressful, and yes, it does sort of get to me at times where things haven't quite gone right, or I think the council's had a bit of an unfair treatment, perhaps in the media. But what I do to unwind is I go running. So I run quite a lot, and that really helps me sort of clear my head and think. So on a Saturday and Sunday, I'll probably do 10K on a Saturday and 10 on a Sunday, and then get up early a couple of mornings a week and do a shorter run. So a bit of running really to help me.
I bet you don't run 10 miles.
Well, no, this is true. I don't go fast running, but I do go jogging in the morning because I've got a Springer Spaniel, and any Springer Spaniel owner out there will know they're just like a walking energy machine. So first thing I have to do every day, you know, I do this whatever the time of day. So I've been up sometimes at 5, if I have to go to the mainland for a meeting. I take my Springer out and I actually just do a run with him. And also what that does, it gives me, because I live in a very beautiful place, I'm plugged in night and area now.
Not Pan.
Well, Pan's got its advantages.
I know,
as well.
I live there for 20
that's fine,
years,
but I like Knighton because I can stand and look at the sea and kind of contemplate what's the next emails I'm getting. No, but it just clears the air for me and starts the day. So I try and do that every day. I don't do enough of it, I have to be honest about that, but at least that's one of the ways I unwind. And then my wife would say I fall asleep when I get home because I'm so mentally tired. That does happen. And then, of course, I get high moments like Spurs beat Inter last night, so I'm feeling good at the moment.
But you're coming down back to earth on a Sunday, though, when you visit, I was going to call it Highbury, when you go to the Emirates.
Yeah,
Highbury,
yeah.
You're going back in time as well now.
But anyway, there we are, so it's a bit of that. And I've got, you know, a very active family, a number of them are growing up on the island.
Family's really important.
They're always bombing around, demanding this and demanding that, so I have to kind of meet that need, I suppose.
Good, excellent. So two family blokes in, really. I mean, you know, people, but the way you're portrayed sometimes by other people is like you're a couple of aliens from outer space, isn't it? You know, it's all your blooming fault. That's the attitude. We're going to go back to Oscar in a moment with a question. I just want to take you back to what you were saying about this newsletter.
Yeah.
And one thing that, obviously, we have an ageing population.
Yeah.
And not everybody's got an email. So how would they be able to communicate with this this big newsletter?
Do you know, that's a really good question.
I'm full of them, Dave.
And as John's thinking up the answer for me on that one, what I will say is, first of all, those that have got email and can access, and don't underestimate all of our more retired people, because they are some quite good silver surfers out
there.
But the reason behind it was we wanted to be able to enable people to get the facts on a regular basis, once a month, of what actually is going on, some of the interesting things that you're saying we don't publish enough. And the start of that was to be more digital and go down the e-road. But you ask a really good point, and it's one that John's about to answer. And even if he doesn't, I can tell you, I will take away that question, because whether we have to, I don't know, print it or find other means, whether they come into the course, into the Newport and look at it or whatever, we do want people to get access to it, because it's going to be full of interesting things about what we're up to.
Okay.
And actually, people might want to know because they might want to get involved. Yeah. So good question from Vectors Radio. Over to John.
I think we have to start off from small and grow that newsletter. So we have to grow our subscription list and therefore be able to get to as many people as we can straight away. I think for those who don't have access to email, we would want to work with some of our partners and use hard copy, but there are certain restrictions on what we can and can't publish in hard copy these days, so we have to find that balance between between the electronic bit and the hard copy bit. So we'd work, we might, for example, give it to our carers so our carers could leave it with people when they go and visit them. We would certainly display it in our libraries.
Yeah.
But we're just starting to grow the process at the moment.
Have you got a target of how many you can hit? I mean, what is it, 142,000 people that live on the island? They ain't all going to read it because, you know, they're young kids and so on. They're not going to be interested in it, but yeah, so is there a target?
There's 65,000 houses.
Right.
If we could get one into every house, I'd be happy.
That'd be good.
Yeah, that'd be good as a start, I think, or maybe later on. But I think what's realistic in looking at some of the stats in other places would be if we can get to about 20,000 subscribers in a year. I think that would start to give us a really good build that we could then grow from. But we do need people to come onto the website, to click, to subscribe, because for all the changes in GDPR, data protection and those sorts of things, they need to log into the service.
Isn't this where the people come in and start doing what they did years ago and working for each other? Just say, for instance, I've got the facility, I sign up, I get it printed off, and I give it to my dear old mum who's 85, who doesn't have the internet. Yeah, okay, yeah. She's not too hot on the old eyes, but I mean, somebody could read it to her or whatever.
And that does something else, doesn't it? Interestingly, you take it round to your mum. One, you've got to get some exercise to get round there. Two, your mum actually gets to see you. So it starts a communication in that way. And there, so it, actually there are many benefits, but most important from us point of view is to try and let people know in our own way what's going on.
Yeah, and I think the challenge is we've got to make it interesting, because nobody's really interested in the council services until something happens that the council should have done. So you can imagine that the first day we don't pick somebody's bin up, they're straight on the phone, but we might not hear from them for the rest of the
year. I was.
I know, I checked. but then they're not on the phone for the rest of the year. You know, people can drive to work without any particular problems, absolutely fine. As soon as there's a hole in the road, then we get them on the phone. So it's about how we can interest them to know more about what the council does, because we cover such a vast range of services that people often only see us through one dimension. They might see the library service and say, the Alawite's got a great library service, and never associate the fact that it's run by the council in the main, although we have got five fantastic community libraries. They might use our leisure centres and never realise that they're council operated leisure centres. So they see them in discrete service areas, but don't actually see that that's the council that's providing those services.
I've got another idea, Dave. You like this one? That newsletter that you're doing, why don't you do it in audio form? Because then people can hear the sincerity, and rather than read something, and it sounds like, you know, Gestapo might be reading it, or you know, it's just something that will bring to life. And just those people that are short-sighted, long-sighted, you know, not very good eyesight, it would just bring it to life and it would get them involved.
And that's the second time I've heard that idea in 2 days. So I've been doing a number of staff conferences over the last day, and equally the staff are saying they might like something of a very similar kind. So it's a big challenge for our comms team now, and maybe we'll take some lessons off you about how we can put a little podcast together that does that.
Well, the lovely thing is that I've been working with
Matt White
in the last week or so, and I must admit, we've had better understanding with how things work and so on and so forth. So hopefully we're building some bridges, and we're, you know, the most important thing at the end of all of this for us is that you communicate to us, we communicate to our listeners, we better educate them, and then we probably wouldn't have been in the mess. Just say, for instance, if we'd have done this nationally, we wouldn't be in the mess that we are now, deciding whether Brexit was good or not, which obviously leads us on to, how is that affecting everything? Will it affect everything? Can you plan for something that's not really sorted out yet?
It's a real challenge for us, actually, to plan, because, as you say, there are so many imponderables at the moment. We work very closely with something called the Local Resilience Forum, which is effectively all of the emergency services and all of the local authorities across Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. And at that level, we've been putting some plans in place and actually have plans for having regular meetings post March the 29th to make sure that, you know, we're looking at everything and all the impacts that are going on. We've also got an internal working group in the council that's just trying to put together and trying to unpick the latest in the deal and just work out what we may or may not do. So we've got very good business continuity plans as a council. It's about testing those business continuity plans and saying, well, you know, if the ferries couldn't get the fuel, what would we do? If we had problems like we had in the winter where we had water problems, how would we get water across? How would we deal with those particular issues in the short term? But then we've also got to look longer term as well. So if the statements the Bank of England were making yesterday are true, how might that affect the council's budget, and how might that affect the income that we could get, and how would we have to be able to respond to that? So it's pretty dynamic at the moment, but we are starting to put some meat on the bones of those plans now.
But you're obviously doing all the other stuff and having to watch this. And it might be so soul-destroying, isn't it? Watching them sort of mess around. And don't you just want to, you know, come on, guys, get on with it so we can do our job.
Well, that's my line on it is, you know, whichever way people voted, and as you know, the island was in favour of leaving overall, about 68% or something. But at the end of the day, I think just let's get on with it. Let's just do it. Mm. I believe in the resilience of the community, not only on the island but beyond. And I think we've got a good track record over all the years as a country of, you know, standing firm, getting ourselves sorted out and moving on. And I think that's what will come into play. People will actually deal with it. And on the island, we've got a good track record just on our voluntary sector, which I know I keep repeating. But every time you meet some of the people working in the voluntary sector, have to be admiring really what they do for no. And John quoted about the water shortage, you know, the 4x4 drivers that turn up to make sure that people got water to their house who need it for things like, you know, dialysis or any of the other issues they've got. I just thought, God, this is amazing. Yeah. And they were pleased to do it.
We come together, don't we?
Yeah, we are.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's great.
We do have this amazing spirit, but we just sort of forget sometimes. We're not too good on the old memory, are we? Because I've forgotten all about that, Dave, and we should be shouting about those things.
Yeah, I mean, we had staff who worked sort of 18-hour days, 4 days in a row. They dealt with the snow for 2 days, and then they dealt with a potential water outage in Newport for two more days. And not one member of staff who we rang up over the weekend to say, can you come in and help, turned us down. They were all there doing the right thing for the community, and nobody from the voluntary sector who'd also been working over this period of time turned us down either. They all stepped up and did a fantastic job.
Yeah, no, good on them. Yeah, and we absolutely should remember them every you know, every time something like that happens. Yes, it happens, and then we bury it and forget about it, and then start knocking everybody. Yeah. And every now and again, we should get it out, be positive, and look at the good things. Yes, there are the bad things, and we're probably run out of time to talk about most of them now. But you will come back, and you know, we've touched on the floating bridge. We're hoping that's going to get better. Hopefully, fingers crossed. We've got one more question from Oscar. I think it's a really awful question. So, it's a real stinker, David. It'll put you in a bad mood, I guarantee it. Come on, Oscar, give us that last question.
If money wasn't the object, what would you like to see happen on the island?
Good question.
Go on, that's a good question.
Immediately in my mind, when you ask that question, I would like to see such a good offer. I'm not saying Disneyland, but I'm saying like an Eden project or something that's so amazing that people come to the island just to visit that, and we get the benefit, but at the same time we don't get completely overwhelmed by people all year round, so that then we could actually sit back and say, you know what, we offer fantastic things to people that want to visit this place. There's loads of stuff to do as you're growing up, and actually if you work here you can do anything you want. And I think for me, then I'll be sitting back doing my garden thinking, do you know, I might have played a bit of a hand in that.
You can retire, you know, gracefully then, can't you?
Yeah, but then I have to do other things like, you know,
walk the dog,
dig the garden, cut the edges, all those things, like, you know.
What about you, John? What's?
So I think for me, I think I'd like to be able to provide enough affordable housing for all of the people on the island who desperately need houses that they can move into and live in. Because I think without a good base and a good quality, a good starting point, then we can't encourage people to go on and, you know, really have a good quality of life. We know that the numbers of people who need a house are increasing. We know that the numbers of people in crisis are increasing. So for me, it's about a good affordable housing stock for people who are on the island at the moment, not for people to move here, move into, but for people who are on the island, and something called extra care facilities. So, you know, those people who are currently over 65 who are living alone but don't need to go into adult social care but might need a different type of accommodation, they can come out of their homes and free that stock up as well for everybody else.
Brilliant. Hey, look, gentlemen, we've run out of time. We've only got about 50 seconds left, but I just want to say thank you for coming in, taking the time and the trouble for a start. I'm hoping that people out there have a better understanding of what is going on, and I know it wasn't like a political free-for-all and having a bit of an argument, and you know, because I don't believe that gets us anywhere. I think what we need to do is open discussions, keep talking talking, and I think that's what I like about the fact that you are talking to Newport Parish Council and so on about the parking and so on, and I think that's what we should be doing. So hopefully, fingers crossed, you're going to come back again, and we'll get some questions from the people out there. Yeah. So you don't doubt you'll come in before Christmas, but have a lovely Christmas, and we'll hopefully pick up again in the new year.
Yeah, can I thank Oscar? It's never easy for us, and we're kind of more seasoned, but here he is sitting here asking the questions, and I'm really appreciating that. So well done, Oscar.
Thank you. Yep.
FM 104.6. Vectis Radio.